Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. It's Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to my mom, to my wife. Usually I have the kids here in the studio, but it was a really late night last night, so they kind of slept in, and when they woke up, they were a mess. We had this all-day lacrosse tournament in the league that I coach in, so we had like 450 kids, and we had this big inter-league one-day massive tournament that took, you know, from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m., and then at all the coaches, we had this coaches full contact lacrosse game. So there's 20 guys on either side. And it was just an aggressive mashup of, it was just collision after collision. We had one ACL, pretty brutal, just totally snapped, which was pretty rough to watch. One of the guys had his hip actually popped out. So I don't know what you call that. Fortunately, our goaltender is an orthopedic surgeon. And he had to, most of his running was running from the goal to attend to these patients on the ground. Pretty remarkable. I feel like I got hit by a car, but I feel good here this morning on Money Matters. Welcome. Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. I want to talk about the Comey piece and Trump and the economy. And then we're going to talk about retail here today, which is just the story, the economic story of 2017. There's even a Wikipedia page now about the retail apocalypse that is hitting America. And we're kind of just in the, I don't know if we're in the very beginning of it, and this is going to go for another 2 or 3 years, but we are in the throes of a really tough retail environment for stores. So companies like Macy's has been hit very hard from a stock perspective. Nordstrom, JCPenney getting really hammered in markets. I want to talk that through. We'll also go back to the phones here. So I know that we had, if you're wondering about income investing, and we've talked a lot about, I've mentioned several different investments that are ETF related. How do you generate dividends? And how do you generate income or interest? How do you generate distributions? How do you get cash flow going inside a portfolio, knowing that rates are starting to head higher here in the United States? They almost got back to the 3% mark. Now they've rolled back over on the 10-year treasury. It's only around 2.25% today, 2.25%, not a whole lot of yield for government bonds. But where do we go from here? How do you get that 3%? We're not trying to stretch too far here. 3.5%, 4% in dividend yields. Remember, total return is what investors are going for. Growth plus income. Very difficult to navigate the growth side because there's so much emotion baked into the market, up or down. The income piece is very steady in a given year, particularly if you spread it out through the three areas that we talk about: dividends that come from stocks, interest that comes from various bond categories, the key there is various and categories, and then three, distributions that come from an area we call alternative income. That could be preferred stocks, it could be REITs, real estate investment trusts, or areas that we call income commodities. Really, I'm talking about pipeline companies that pay out distributions. You add those three up, and they create a steady income stream in any given year. It's not steady particularly over a week or a day or a week or even a month, but over the course of a year, a 3 or 3.5 or 4% cash flow really helps with your long-term rate of return. Remember, if you go back really to the beginning of time, go back to 1900, and you look at the S&P 500, which has averaged 9.9% per year, almost a 10% annual rate of return. 43% of that has to do with reinvesting the dividends. We're talking about almost half of the entire stock market rate of return over a century has to do with continuing to collect and reinvest dividends, collect and reinvest dividends. And there's a lot of different vehicles to do that. We talk about various ETFs here all the time. There are dozens and dozens of different ETFs that focus in on this, and we can certainly talk that through. So your questions here on Money Matters, if you are wondering about, hey, what are some of those vehicles in order to do this in a low-cost way? Happy to talk about it here on the show. Whether do you own an annuity or buy an annuity to do income? Do you do a bond ladder? Do you do individual companies? Do you do mutual funds? What's better? We talked last week about active management versus passive management. Which one works better? Maybe you have an IRA question or an RMD question or a pension versus a lump sum question. That's why we're here on a Sunday morning to talk that through. Maybe it's just it's something to do with inheritance or cash, or now you're the trustee and you're in charge. Hey, I'm in charge. I've got to make some decisions here for the family. These are the type of questions that we can certainly answer here on a Sunday morning. Maybe it's a 401k or a 403b or a TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan. These are all the economic or personal financial or investment type planning questions that you have. Maybe it's you and your wife and you're wondering, hey, honey, what should we do? Well, let's call into Money Matters on Sunday morning and have these questions answered. I'm happy to do that for you. And it's a fun part about Money Matters here. The number here in the studio, and we'll go to the phones in a minute. The number here is 404-872-0750. Again, phone lines open, 404-872-0750. Or if you're calling from Texas, Michigan, Washington, California, Pennsylvania, my home state, North Carolina, my alma mater state, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Now, let's before we go to the phones here, let's talk a little bit about Comey and Apprentice, the Apprentice style firing by Trump. You know, it's kind of like Trump came out and just said, "Hey, sorry, bud, you're more drama than the Real Housewives of Atlanta, and now you're out of here." And I've seen both. Again, I've seen different articles on whether it's Bloomberg or Reuters about impeachment for Trump. It's all over. It's that the impeachment word, if you did a word search, it would go, it's through the roof right now. As if the Comey firing is this gargantuan event. And I understand the historical comparisons to Nixon, but Comey was so much drama. In fact, what was Trump's quote? As I was thinking that this is kind of like Real Housewives of Atlanta, here's what Trump said. He was a showboater and a grandstander. The FBI was in turmoil. I know that. You know that. Everybody knows that. That's about right. But I just don't see this as this giant event. The heat map right now seems to put this at a 9 or a 10 on the scale. I give it like a 2. Now, maybe I'm totally off on this. But remember, Trump detractors take him literally. And they don't take him seriously. But they take him so literally. Trump supporters take him seriously, but they don't take him literally. So the Comey swirl is this, encapsulates this to the letter, right? You've got all the detractors are saying, oh, well, this is a mess. He's gone. And supporters say, look, you know, I don't take this too seriously because this is just the way this guy is. Democrats need something to complain about. And Russia is their version of the Obama birth certificate and Benghazi. They're trying to delegitimize Trump. And I get that. That's politics. Comey issue is just the latest straw that's being grasped by the Dems and the Trump detractors to do this. And it shows that, now, yes, it shows the Trump White House, very green. They're very green at communicating. They've got a really strong-willed boss. And will it delay things like healthcare and tax reform? Yeah, probably. Does it delay it 6 months? No way. Maybe a couple of weeks. Will it kill healthcare reform? No. Will it kill tax reform? No. We already expect healthcare reform to take at least until July. Then they have to pass a budget, August, September. Then they can get to tax reform. And that looks like that won't take effect until, or won't really happen until the first quarter of 2018. But this is not the silver bullet that the Trump opposition is looking for. If it was, the stock market would be telling us that it was. It's the whole impeachment talk is going to dominate Washington for a while, but and nothing's going to get done for a little while. But it's not going to kill tax reform. It's not going to kill healthcare reform. Listen, the market this week, the Dow's only had 4 moves of 1% or more in either direction this entire year. That's the fewest since 1965. So the market is telling us that, yeah, there's all these headlines and there's all this worry, but it doesn't see major political, economic risk in the market. If it was the if the market thought that this would delay these big major reforms, you'd see it in markets. Let's go to the phones here. Let's start with, I don't know, we'll just pick a number. Carol, who joins us from Atlanta. Carol, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Well, I'll see if I can explain it clearly. I plan to sell my house, which I've lived in for over 40 years, in approximately a year and a half. I will not have been married 2 full years. Can we still collect the $500,000 deduction as a married couple?
Okay, so here, here's what we're looking at here. You've been, so what's the basis on the house? Approximate, what'd you pay? Like $5 for the house 50 years ago?
Actually,
$10,000?
Around $50,000.
$50,000. And you've lived in it for 40 years.
Five
and what
years.
What's approximate value of the house now?
The house across the street sold for $1.1 million. So I figure $1 million.
$1.1 million. Wow. So
Garden Hills.
In Garden Hills. So you're an in-towner and you've been dealing with major traffic too, and it's gonna get better.
It has to get better.
And you know what? I was actually worried about property values in town because the traffic was looking so terrible. And again, I go back to my talk about the economy and the Atlanta economy and GDOT and CW Matthews. I'm so glad that they got this thing done. That now we can get back to hopefully maybe even better traffic, Carol. So your property value may have actually just gone back up, and you're even more concerned now with that $500,000 exemption that you could potentially get. So we got to go to quick news, weather, traffic, then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that exemption in a minute. So hang on the line, Carol. You're listening to Money Matters with me, Wes Moss, right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. Let's go back to, hey, Carol, are you still on the line?
I sure am.
Your property value is going through the roof because now traffic in your neighborhood is quelled, and you're selling your house that you lived in for 40 years that you bought for about $50,000. You're going to sell it for over $1 million. So you're worried that you're going to have this giant capital gain. So your question is about the $500,000 exclusion for married couples. Remember, and this is something that doesn't come up as much because we've been in this crazy real estate environment where it's been a really long time since people have had gains. If you had bought a house in the last 10 years, you still might not have much of a gain, but Carol's been in here for more than that, 4 decades. And your concern, Carol, is that you're not... Yes, of course, you get your $250,000 exclusion on a capital gain. But the question is that because now you're married, do you qualify for the marital one, which is $250,000 times two or $500,000? And so you've been married how long?
We haven't yet. We're planning on it soon.
Oh,
We're planning on selling the house. But now it doesn't count if he's lived here because there's no common law in Georgia.
Well, you've got, you have to be, so here are the tests. You've got, you have to, so A, you've got to be married and file a joint tax return for the year in which you're going to sell the house, number one.
Okay.
And then, now this is one of the two of you, and this is where I think this might work out for your benefit. Either of you have to meet the ownership test, and that's really just that you've done the two, you've lived there primary residence 2 out of the last 5 years, which of course you have, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both of you, though, have to meet what's called the use test, which really goes back to saying this is not really an investment property, which it's not an investment property. So that sounds like you probably meet that test, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then during... You can't have used the $250,000 exemption. Like, he couldn't have just gotten the exemption on his house, moved in with you to get an exemption on your house in the last 2 years. Has he done that?
Nope, he hasn't. He hasn't owned a house.
So, I would move up the date of the wedding ASAP. Carol, move up the date of the wedding. You can deem this the capital gains exemption wedding. And I think, from what I can tell in our conversation, you meet the parameters here, but you've got to go to your CPA and go through all the other nuances of the timing and really get an answer from a full-time tax person. Again, this is radio. I'm giving what I think, my opinion on this. I think you might be able to do this. I'm just qualifying by saying, make sure you talk with your CPA and get a definitive final answer. But move up the wedding, Carol. This is fun. Good morning. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on Mother's Day weekend. It's actually Mother's Day Sunday. And it's exciting to be here with you on a Sunday morning until 11 o'clock. We have been going to the phones, taking your calls, your questions here in the studio. We've talked Atlanta Bridge collapse and how I really, the more I've thought about this, and I know that we wanted to talk about this. Of course, it's big news. Yes, traffic is going to get a lot better, or maybe go back to quote normal. I think it's actually going to be a little better than normal, because now we've changed a little bit of habits. There's lots of folks I know that take MARTA now that didn't before. It was a catalyst to increase that. Even if MARTA rides take, let's say it only takes 5% of cars off the road long-term, that's a big deal. And so that's exciting. The other thought here is that I really believe that if GDOT had extended this out, that it took 6 months and not 6 weeks, that you could see the reputation of our city get to the point where it actually really pinches economic growth. Because you get to a point where you just don't, you feel like you can't get anywhere. And that's not good for a city. You can't have a city that's so compartmentalized where if you're in Midtown, you're like, I'm never going anywhere. I can barely even get to Buckhead now. And if you're in Buckhead, you say, well, I can never get to Midtown, but I can't go north either. That's not good for an economy. You've got to have some fluidity with traffic. And WSB traffic team is the best in the country at doing that for a major metropolitan area. So between what they can do for us as commuters and what C.W. Mathis and GDOT did, really save the reputation, which could have kind of gone off a cliff had we lingered with traffic this badly, that has been as bad as it's been over the last 6 weeks, for the rest of the year. And that we've avoided that. So I think we really avoided overall economic disaster here. And I'm thankful for that here on a Sunday morning. Let's go to the phones, though. 404-872-0750. We also have a WSB Weekend Prize Pack in the next 20 minutes. And we also have, I want to talk about retail, the headline of retail apocalypse. But let's go to a couple quick calls. I'm going to go to Mike in Smyrna. Mike, let's start with you. What's your question? How can I help?
Yes, Ross. I've got about $460,000 that I need to park for the next 12 to 18 months. Currently, I've got it in a money market in a CD paying from 0.2% to 0.6%. And recently I heard of online banking, which I don't know anything about. Most of the money I've got in money market CDs is just brick and mortar banks. Online banking, I was looking on the internet. You could get 1 to 1.25%. My question is it safe?
Yes. And this is a question that that's come up year after year for almost 20 years now, and it's interesting because I think we've all thought the same question. Hey, I can get let's say, this is your scenario. This is very applicable to a lot of us listening, or a lot of listeners. Hey, I'm going to get 0.5% in my bank, my brick and mortar local around the corner bank. Or I can go to bankrate.com. I can find CIT Bank or Everbank or Synchrony Bank, and they're going to pay me 1.1%. So full 0.5% or a little bit more beyond that. And that can really add up. the 0.5% on a $100,000 is a big number, and you're talking about $400,000. Now we're really talking about some serious money here. So $100,000 at 1% is $1,000. So it's basically a $500 bump per $100,000 for you. You're talking $450. So you're talking about 500 times. Let's call it 4.5. Call it. You're talking about $2,200 difference. So my question to you is it worth even a slight mental worry about it or not? These banks are safe. I've for 20 years now, I've seen people use online banks, and they're getting 1% and versus 0.5%. Or go back when money market rates were 3%, and they're getting 4%. I have never seen an issue with an online bank. I've never seen anybody say, "Well, because it was an online bank, they made off with my money, or they collapsed and I never got my money back." They're still FDIC insured. So you still have to comply with the FDIC limits, Mike. The same thing you would have to do, the $250,000 limits per titled account. You still have to comply with all that, just like you would if you were at Brand Bank here in Georgia, let's say, or Fidelity Bank, right, here in Georgia. But online, it is a little less. You have a little less tangible, tactile feel that, hey, my money is in a place. It's not really in a place anyway when you walk into a brick and mortar bank, right? It's not there in the safe. But there is the feeling to some extent that it is, because you can go talk to somebody. Right. And for some folks, it's worth it to take a little bit less. Now, what I typically would tell people is that my thought is that you can usually go to your bank and say, look, hey, you and I both know I can get 1.1% at Synchrony online. Can you bump mine up to 1 or 0.9? So it's pretty close. It's worth $2,000-$3,000 to me over the next year and a half. Hey, isn't there something we can do? And usually banks are a little bit flexible with that, because you can talk to real life people, God forbid, right? So I'm telling you that these online banks are safe. I've seen them be safe for 20 years. I don't see that changing. But there is a little bit of there's a tiny price to, or it's worth it to me to be able to talk with somebody, and particularly with money market type money, where it's just going to sit there and you're just trying to maximize an ultra safe rate of return. I'd go to my bank and say, look, guys, I'm going to be here. This money's going to be here for 18 months. Let's get me closer to 1%, so I don't have to go to an online bank. 404-872-0750. Sandy joins us from Decula. Sandy, what's going on? How can I help?
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Good.
I was listening earlier to an earlier call, and you caught my attention when you were talking about the minimum required distribution for Roth, or for regular IRAs or 401s or 403s. You said the exception. You didn't say exception, but you said except Roth IRAs. I'm like, what do you mean except Roth IRA? So I looked it up, and it said I do not have to worry about a minimum distribution until my death. So now I need to know what that is all about.
Okay, so this is interesting. With one of the, back when Roth IRAs were new, and we were jumping up and down about how great they were, we were saying really two things. We were saying that you can put money in these, you don't get a tax deduction for it like you did with a regular IRA or a pre-tax contribution like you would at a 401k. But the money grows tax deferred, and it comes out tax free when you use it. You put in $500,000, it grows to, or you could put in $50,000, it grows to $500,000. Every dollar you take out of that Roth IRA comes out tax free to you, which is great, right? Different than an IRA. You pull money out of an IRA, it comes out as ordinary income. So what we were always jumping up and down about, and quite frankly still today, is that that's one of the great things about the Roth, the tax-free status. The second thing that's not quite as, nothing's as good as tax-free, the second bell or whistle on a Roth account rule that's in your advantage is that you do not have to take a required minimum distribution from it. And that's helpful if you get in your 70s and you don't necessarily need money right now. The IRS forces you to take it out of your regular IRAs, upping your tax bracket, upping what you pay to the IRS. If hypothetically all your money was in a Roth, then you wouldn't have to worry about doing this required minimum distribution. So most folks will have some money in a regular IRA, and I bet you this is your case, Sandy, correct me if I'm wrong. I bet you have some IRA money and some Roth money. And if that's the case, you still have to do your required minimum distributions out of the regular IRA, but you can exclude the value of the Roth in that equation, and you can exclude having to worry about taking a required minimum distribution as long as you're living. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
What's a little weird about this, and you mentioned upon death, what's a little weird about this is that when someone inherits the Roth from you, they actually do have to take required minimum distributions. That's what makes it a little bit confusing. But in your case, Sandy, you do not have to worry about it.
Okay. One other question I have on this. I have been converting some of my regular IRA money into Roth, and I'm wondering when that I can. I'm no longer able to do that, or if I should even be talking with my advisor about what is my best game plan. You know,
Sandy, you should be
10 years and down the road.
You're a better radio host than I am because I should have brought that up too. This is another thought: is that the. If you can convert money from an IRA to a Roth, and that helps you in the future avoid these required minimum distributions. I have a scenario. I'm working with a family today where they sold a property and they have a ordinary income loss because of the nature of the real estate transaction. So let's say you bank a $100,000 ordinary income loss from the sale of a property somewhere, right? Or sure. You could take that ordinary income loss of $100,000, take $100,000 out of a regular IRA and convert it into a Roth IRA and effectively cancel out any ordinary income taxes you would have to pay because you take the loss against the IRA withdrawal that would otherwise be taxed, get that money into a Roth. So if you have some ordinary income losses in a year, then typically what families I see do, and this makes a lot of sense if this scenario comes up, is you can convert a pretty big chunk of whatever that ordinary income loss is. You can look at your regular IRAs and say, hey, I've got this big loss. Why don't I at least use it to convert money from an IRA to a Roth? That way, I don't have to take required minimum distributions out of this Roth account. So very good point. Again, yes, talk to your advisor about it and talk to your CPA about it because you really need to run a dummy tax return or a hypothetical tax return as if you were going to do that to really make sure see how it impacts all of your other tax bracket, all of the other, your Medicare costs or your Medicare supplemental costs that can be impacted by it or Part B. So make sure you're looking at all these scenarios when you're thinking about doing these conversions. We've got to do quick WS McDonald's weekend or WSB weekend prize pack. It's not a McDonald's weekend prize pack. Why would I ever say that? Family four pack of Gwinnett Braves anytime tickets. Good for any home game at Coolray Field. And a pair of tickets to see Michael McDonald on October 22nd in Atlanta Symphony Hall. That's, again, a family four-pack of Gwinnett Braves anytime tickets. Good for any home game at Coolray Field. And a pair of tickets to see Michael McDonald on October 22nd at Atlanta Symphony Hall. Third caller, 404-741-0750. More Money Matters straight ahead.
WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need. I keep
forgetting we're not in love. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. I keep forgetting that is Michael McDonald. It's so funny. I initially thought, oh, wow, you're playing Warren G. I think that's what everyone thought. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I want to quickly talk about this retail apocalypse. I mean, if you go back and look at the numbers, you've heard about these store closings. I mean, GameStop, 150 locations, Crocs, 150 of 550 stores, Radio Shack, 552 stores, JCPenney, Sears, Kmart, BB, BCBG, Wet Seal, Abercrombie, Guess. I mean, the list just keeps going. Thousands of retail stores are closing. Some of them are going out of business completely. Some of them are restructuring. Some of them just are paring back because they overbuilt. If you really do the math, and here's what's happening, though. The U.S. consumer isn't spending less. They're spending more. They're just spending more in a very different way. Think of this staggering statistic. And I graph this on the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis has a wonderful way to look through economic data. In the graph I did this week, we see experience. So retail trade, food service and drinking places. So going out to eat, going out to have a drink. That's gone from $320 billion a year in 2000 to $650 billion in 2017. That's experience shopping. Look at what's happened to department stores, though. And I charted this from the year 2000. Department store sales have just continued to go down. E-commerce sales have continued to go up. So I did this starting back in really the year 2000. If you look at a chart, you'll see that department store sales went from 200 back in 2000. Department store sales were $232 billion. E-commerce sales were 27. That's it. As of the end of last year, department sales down to $154 billion. So down something like $80 billion. E-commerce sales have gone from $27 billion to $344 billion. So down 80 in department stores, up about $320 billion. So just a staggering shift in where and how we buy. The U.S. consumer is still alive and well. Be careful of reading too far into these headlines. You're listening to Money Matters. Find me and the Money Matters team, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails in the upper right-hand corner come straight to me and the team. Happy to talk throughout the week right here in Atlanta. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful Sunday, Mother's Day. Stay tuned for the best programming on the planet right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.